This is RSBNB Update, episode 572, recorded Thursday, June 16th, 2016. It's time for a new watch. Hello, everybody, and hello. This is RSBNB Update, kind of a monumental anniversary edition of RSBNB Update, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Just Dave and myself here this week.
Hello, hello.
But in any case, how are you doing, Dave?
Oh, I'm doing well. How about you?
Good.
I'm doing a lot better now that I would say this week's updates have kind of made up for the past couple weeks, just in terms of quality and quantity. So I'm definitely feeling a lot better about that. But yeah, it's going well. So
good. I'm glad. And for those of you guys listening here, you might be wondering why I sound perplexed. And Dave, I just said we were going to restart because the timer wasn't started. And you know what happened? I think it's time for a new watch. I pressed my button to start the timer, and I got a bunch of gibberish displaying on my watch screen.
Oh, my.
All right. Well, let's hope that there's no editing notes for this week, because otherwise we'll be flying by the seat of the pants, and I guess...
Oh, man.
I guess maybe that's why this 15-year-old little digital watch is time to be retired.
I think it's, you know what time it is, Shane? It's time to get a new watch is what it is. And that's when this actually applies.
I thought you were going to say it's high noon.
Oh, that too. I mean, either one. Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
Yeah, we do have some watch stuff to talk about later. But in any case, this is the best time, this kind of thing that's ever happened to me when I've restarted because I forgot the timer. It's just, wow, lots of other interesting little things. But anyways, it's going to be a monumental anniversary episode of RSBNB Update. More on that later. Other things to talk about include invention, an early look at what the potential mining and smithing rework looks like, your questions, of course, and a look at what's been happening in the world of tech with E3, Apple, and a little bit more on that website called Reddit. But anyways, let's get going with the invention updates for this week. So, invention. A skill that came out in January and has received, I guess, what seems like the lion's share of updates this year. Does it not?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And
it's good.
I mean, I guess that this is good because when invention came out, it was kind of a shell of a skill.
It really was. And I think we were all on the same page in hoping that it filled out sooner than later, and I think it's safe to say, over the past 5-6 months, it has definitely filled out more than I think all of us really expected. I can speak for myself here saying that I figured it would be a couple updates a year, be sort of like summoning was or dungeoneering, every 4 or 5 months we'd kind of get a bigger chunk, but this has definitely been scattered out, every couple weeks, really, just with the little ninja fixes. Some are a little bit more spread out than others, but it's definitely there. And, the updates and tweaks are definitely noticeable and, really are starting to fill out the skill. And I think it's definitely going in the right direction. So.
Yeah. And the ones that were brought this week are, of course, from a top-down level, augmentable defenders, augmentable degrade-to-dust equipment, and a bunch of other little things, including disassembly fixes, rotomatic stacking, and the item XP window is now visible without going into the more complicated overview.
Yeah, and that's huge for me. That was always something, even, from day one of invention, was... you kind of had to sort of get a feel for how much XP you were getting, and sort of rely, at least I did, rely on your XP counters to sort of judge, where your weapons or, what have you, would level up, because, the only way, prior to this fix was obviously opening up the window, and you couldn't do that if you were in combat. And, you know, the most efficient training areas to train your weapons or, you know, gear and invention was usually multi-combat for, you know, unsaid reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was kind of, you know, you could only check when you had to, you know, make a bank trip or when you, you know, it leveled up, you know, and it was just kind of a surprise. But this is really good, and I'm actually quite surprised that this wasn't really on release or it took them this long to sort of implement this. But here it is, and this is huge.
Yeah, so. And I mean, the Defenders make sense because if you think about it, a Defender isn't a weapon, and it's not a piece of armor, and it's certainly not a tool. So the question is, what do you do with the Defender? Well, the Defender has one gizmo slot, and they made it so it can take either a weapon or an armor gizmo, which I think is pretty good, and that also drastically improves the amount of perks that you can use. I can imagine some of the defensive perks being pretty good, because normally you need a shield to use a defensive perk, mm-hmm. and when you think about it, most people are going to be using weapon gizmos, and the reason people use Defenders is to get access to those defensive evolution of combat abilities. So I think that is probably the best thing to come out of this, and it's definitely going to create some interesting combinations for what can be done with Defenders in RS. Personally, for me, I think that they still need a bit of a damage boost before I would use them, because you got to remember that they're half of what an offhanded weapon is, or 25% of a main-handed weapon.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. You're going in the right they're going in the right direction with keeping the Defenders versatile, which was, you know, the spirit of you know, Defenders in the first place. But I agree, you know, in order for it to really sort of give that edge and be competitive, you know, with just without a Defender or just a shield, they're going to have to increase the damage a little bit. Maybe, you know, 75%, you know, it doesn't have to be completely OP, but something along the lines to where the only difference is going to be gameplay and style, not necessarily like damage output. It's more utility. And I think that's definitely where invention shines. You know, it's adding that utility and, you know, obviously the perk system to your existing gear. So if they can sort of level that out just a little bit more, I mean, I think it's almost there, but I think it can be polished and smoothed out perfectly. And I think that would really open up the possibilities and, you know, kind of just move away from that model of just stacking defense or, you know, stacking attack power or whatever in PVM for sure. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, okay. And then the second thing they did, of course, the degradable to dust equipment can be augmented. So this is Malevolent Saronic and Tectonic armor, in addition to the stuff that you get from God Wars Dungeon 2. So that can be augmented like you do normally, except there's a caveat. You need a new armor piece, an augmenter, and 36 of the Divine Charge item in order to do this. These armor pieces will use their own charge rather than the main charge pack, and once all charge has been used up, the item can't be siphoned for XP, but can be leveled up to level 10. So the idea is that you need to, I guess, siphon this off or disassemble it prior to the point of ending with all your charge.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess makes sense, because these items were brought into the game meant to be temporary and to encourage people to keep coming back to these combat experiences. So if they made them, you know, use the charge pack, like, for example, the Drygors, then that would kind of go against what that was designed to do.
Right.
So, I mean, that's good, because I think definitely augmenting their level 90 degradable armor is something people have probably wanted to do, because I know the vast majority of people out there probably don't use tank armor for anything that requires a good amount of DPS that's not Slayer.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly.
And I mean, I think I'll just remind everyone at this point that there's no reason, I think, personally, to be using tier 90 equipment for Slayer. I think that tier 85 from ports is good enough, or if you don't want to use the ports armor, you can certainly use the level 80 next stuff if you want power armor for that. But I mean, still, 85 weapons are still very powerful for Slayer.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think that this is definitely geared towards the top end of the combat situation. And, I mean, once again, it comes down to the perks. And I guess now the PVM community will have to take a look and see what can we do in terms of perks in order to make our combat experience better. So, right. Yeah. I don't think there's much else to say about those. So we'll just move on to the other things that came with this week's update. All augmented items will now have disassembled and rather than destroy as their right-click option, which makes sense because you don't want to, you know, destroy the item and lose it. So previously you just drag it down to the invention icon in your backpack. Makes sense. So that's relatively simple. Single item disassembly can now happen during combat, which is really good for Slayer tasks. So no more needing to run out of combat to disassemble those rune plate bodies you get from the Dark Beasts. newly created fishing rod-o-matics can now stack in your bank. Existing fishing rod-o-matics that have no gizmos or item XP can be converted into this new type with a right-click option. And item XP and XP for next level will now appear in an augmented items tooltip and in chat when checked during combat. So no need to go into the complicated right-click check option for your augmented items going forward. So that's very positive because, I mean, that's another thing you had to kind of go out of combat for to check when you were leveling up. So once again, just kind of improving the flow of invention here. Augmented shield bows may now take one weapon and one armor gizmo. So once again, kind of drawing on the same ideas as defenders. But I guess I need to ask the question, does anybody actually use shield bows?
Right. Yeah, I mean, the only ones I would think would be the two-handed you know, higher level bows, but I mean, yeah. I don't think people are really going around with a U shield bow type deal.
No. I mean, is the Zarite bow a shield bow?
I want to say yes, because aren't all two hands considered shield bows or not?
I'm not sure on that. I know the Strike bow is a shield bow, which is the upgraded dark bow, but I'm not sure on the Zarite bow.
Yeah, I'm not completely certain on that.
If that goes in this category, so somebody who is listening to this, that can be an exercise to the listener to check out if the Zarite bow is included in this, because then that would be really interesting for the Zarite bow as a weapon that is range based and does not use armor and could potentially be augmented. Or can the Zarite bow be augmented? I don't know. Maybe I'm just making things up.
Yeah, it sounds like it should be.
Oh,
I
yes. Okay. Zarite bow can be augmented.
Yeah. Because that's tier 80, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, it's a two-handed bow, so I don't know why it doesn't count as a shield bow. Maybe it does. Maybe not. So we'll have to wait and see on that. Shields tier 70 and above may now be augmented. Augmented shields take one armor gizmo, and they gain XP and drain charge at the same rate as off-handed weapons. That's good. So maybe a Dragonfire shield or something at level 75. So if you were doing melee, you could not necessarily need to go with the Sunspear route, but I still think that's the best way to go about this because it's an item that you can reclaim for a small fee compared to other items, and that's level 78. And as was put into game a number of invention patches ago, you do get more XP the higher level your item is. So there you go. Now that's the bulk of the invention changes for this week. Do you feel that this would provide any influence to train invention going forward, or perhaps it just increases the diversity we have in equipment used?
I really think it's just sort of a lot of this is obviously quality of life. I really don't think any of this is really going to you know, hook anybody or sort of grab people into the skill. Again, it's just kind of polishing up what it is that they're not really making it seem more appealing. They're just making it more desirable for those that have, you know, invested a lot of time or money or actually, you know, want to use it and get in depth. But I don't really think this is much of a sales pitch for the skill as it would be if they were, you know, releasing another batch of perks or
we could go with that. I think that would go a long way to encourage people to train combat in you know, use augmented items for more reasons than just, you know, leveling up.
And let me ask you this. Now, has any of this sort of grabbed your attention? Because I know you're kind of just cruising with it. Has any of this, you know, really spiked, like, oh, I really want to train this now? I mean, I think that can hold your answer as well. And in terms of, you know, if they're going to bring people in or just kind of catering to those that have already sort of invested in it.
Not really. The biggest thing that encouraged me to train it was the skilling additions. Mm-hmm. So it still stands at that.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say, like bringing more to the skilling table in regards to invention, I think would bring more people in terms of getting them to want to train it. But again, I think this is just sort of a, you know, just polishing it up and just making it nice for people that may have, again, trained it, got max, and, you know, kind of want to go back and re-explore it. Because as we all know, you know, a lot of people maxed it in a, you know, record setting time. And just kind of never touched it again because it really wasn't accessible or really wasn't efficient in terms of Slayer. And I think this...
Well, there's no need.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of the fixes here this week cater to that sort of demographic of, you know, actually having utility once you're maxed, you know, using it for PVM, using it for Slayer, stuff like that. So if anything, I think it's going to bring back people that have already sort of... done their share of the skill, as opposed to bringing people in that haven't unlocked it yet or really given it too much thought. So I think it sort of brings people back, but in a kind of a backwards way, which is still good. But it's always nice to see invention going in forward motion.
Yeah, and you mentioned a good point about perks, and perks are so important for the skill because they were really shown off at RuneFest of being a core aspect of why you would want to train invention. There was a whole PowerPoint slide put up of potential perks that came into game. And, you know, 50 perks came into game with the first invention update when it was released. And, you know, a good chunk of them were silly and degenerating perks that didn't actually do anything good for you. Right. So I think that should have been looked at perhaps a little bit closer with invention, because if you think about it, anytime you're in a game and you're giving people the ability to level up and customize their items, how many times are they going to want to, you know, use a perk that's going to hurt them, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I felt there was way too many sort of bad perks, and I understand they have to keep a balance, but
like
I think it was a little
antitheism, for example, denies access to protection prayers and curses. Why? Like, what benefit do you gain from that?
Right, and you know, I understand, you know, why they did that was to add a bit of sort of randomness and I guess sort of a tiered system on crafting something to sort of get away from, oh, okay, once I'm level 80, I can craft the best perk. You know, they kind of want you to, you know, tinker around and, you know, as with invention in the real world, you know, you have to make 10 or 15 of one thing before it's sort of perfected. But I
think
just
throw them away right away.
Right. But I think they sort of overdid it a little bit. You know, I think it would have been better to sort of have maybe 25% bad perks and not be so, I guess, prevalent. But I feel like for every good perk, there was a bad perk. And I felt like that 50-50 sort of took away from that because I was trying to augment my Ports wands whenever I was training at Muspa's. And I literally went through about 25 armor or 25 weapon gizmo shells, and I had, out of 25 of those, I got, I think it was the Always Scald on, and I was creating it with the highest tier materials I could, you know, within reason, because I wasn't going to, you know, disassemble Ascension crossbows,
right,
or what have
course.
You. And, you know, I crafted like 25 or 30, and I got Scald on every one, and there was one that I got, I forget what I was looking for, but I got the third tier of that, but I got something that was even worse than getting Scald. So I ended up just putting the one that had, you know, Always Be Scald on, because it was a lesser of the two evils. But, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I was 100 plus invention. I was using, you know,
what kind of materials were you using? Because that's something we're kind of ignoring right here is that if you're using, you know, basic materials that are relatively low leveled, you're going to get garbage perks.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. I was using, you know, the tier just below like level 90. I was using the, you know, the level 70 stuff or, you know, whatever is just below, you know, the highest tier that's not really efficient to, you know, put on not best in slot items, which, you know, if I'm using the second best component, which does cost quite a bit of money to buy the materials to disassemble, you know, I would expect out of, you know, 30 crafts that I would at least get something without a negative perk on it. You know, that's kind of the point of having high level and spending all that money and sort of like that. But yeah, I don't really think that the detrimental perks were really scaled or weighed correctly in terms of, you know, the chance they had to get on the weapon or the armor piece. But
yeah.
And is what it is.
See, I don't know whether this is a result of the skill coming out in pieces or if we're just not 100% satisfied with it yet, but it just feels as though that we're finally getting to the point where this is a fully fleshed out skill, which that brings up the old age-old debate. Do we put a skill out as a shell or do we put it all out at once? And I think there's going to be a variety of angles to talk about that from, whether you're talking from Jagex's point of view or the player's point of view.
Sure.
And at the end of the day, I think that players would prefer everything being full, but in some cases it's easier from Jagex's point of view to put things out as a shell because then they can change things as they go. And I mean, that's what we've obviously seen here with the Defenders update, the shield bows, and then the skilling items as well, and then the better perks coming out with the tools. So.
Right. Well, and you know, I remember correctly, they've kind of stated that, but I feel like a lot of players sort of overlooked that as they usually do, in terms of, what Jagex says are going to do and why. I don't know if, I can't recall if it was in a forum post or a dev blog or whatever, but I do distinctly remember them sort of saying and giving a disclaimer that they were going to release sort of a shell on purpose because they felt like they didn't have that sort of reward capability for the higher levels. So, I mean, I kind of went into it. I expected it to be a shell, and that's what kind of scared me because I figured that, you know, that's just kind of their excuse for having an unfinished product. And like, you know, like I was saying, maybe have three updates a year where they kind of spread it out, but they've really stuck true to what they said and they are filling it out. Not so much yet of being rewards for quests and whatnot. But you know, they really are refining it, but I think it's definitely going in the right direction in terms of, you know, they're polishing it out to where they can, it can be one of these things where every new quest, they can just shoot something out and, you know, it doesn't need to be tweaked every, you know, week or so. So I think that's definitely where they're trying to go with it.
All right. But, we beat this, horse enough on this episode and all the other episodes. Say for me that I think if there were a few more perks, perhaps, and we had the ability to keep doing those invention-related tasks after the tech tree is finished for a bit of invention XP, and I don't know. I think that's probably enough to make this skill a true skill for me and actually call it a decent skill. So this was mainly just a discussion on perks, but we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Because we do think invention is good and the core motivations of invention are good and noble for the game and obviously required after a large amount of time of junk accumulating.
Indeed.
All right, so other tweaks and fixes this week. All monsters within the fight kiln have now been buffed in both life points and damaged. Most notable buffs are to Takar Jad from 7,900 life points to 40,000 life points, and Hurricane from 48,000 life points to 150,000 life points. I wonder why they have been teasing this update for what seems like weeks now, that this was going to be coming this month. I mean, this just goes within the realm of things that needed to be changed with the evolution of combat because things get too easy.
And it's funny, and I'm glad I got my Kilden Cape while I did.
Lots of people are.
Yeah, I pretty much for lack of a better term, I pretty much AFK film. I mean, it was really that easy. And, you know, I was going into it with the mindset of how Fight Caves was back when it was released back in like 05, 06. You know, it was very hard. It was something you had to pay attention to. Knowing how difficult the JAD fight is in old school, you know, I went into the kiln like, oh my gosh, there's multiple waves where there's multiple JADs. Like, this is going to be absolutely terrible. And I really, I almost didn't even have to pay attention to the JAD fight because the damage was so negligible. You know, I just went in with tank armor, and did that. And it really was laughable. You know, Fight Kiln was like one of the biggest, I guess PVM sort of challenge trial type deal. And it really was sort of laughable. I was just joking around. Hey, I think I'll do this for fun and do it for money. Cause it really was, you know, coming from somebody who doesn't like PVM, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. That tells you that it's a little too easy.
Yeah. And see, I don't know why they had to tell players about this.
Yeah.
You think it was right to tell them weeks in advance that this buff was coming?
No, mostly because of the Onyx that's, well, I wouldn't say mostly because, but I think it was probably not their wisest decision because, we all know what happens when they announce bonus experience weekend, you know, to the economy. So,
right.
I mean, regardless on how that trickles down with that, you know, whether it be potions, food, you know, ammo, runes, and, as I said, Onyx, it just seems kind of odd that they would say this as opposed to, you know, any other time. They've just sort of nerfed it into the ground. There, you know, there's been speculation, but it hasn't been like, okay, we might be doing this. You know, it's always been something where it's like, boom, overnight, everybody that, you know, did such and such.
Yeah,
it just
I mean, you know why? It's because anytime you nerf or buff a combat creature, everyone goes to whine and cry about it in World 66 Falador. So,
right, yeah.
I think that's the ultimate motivation behind announcing it previously, which, I mean, it's sick that we should need to do that, announce things
have to cater
before.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, come on, 150,000 life points. That's what the new Barrow sister has in Barrows.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's not even Elite Barrows or Rise of the Six.
Mm-mm.
So, anyways, players now can also use the Surge ability inside the Fight Kiln. I wonder why that was limited, but that's good.
Yeah.
Improved performance on AMD graphics cards, because I know that AMD was lagging a little bit behind the NVIDIA counterparts with NXT.
Yeah.
And multiple dark red messages in-game have been updated to make them easier to read. Excellent.
Well, that's always good.
Yeah, and I mean, you can obviously tell that those are holdovers from the time when everyone had a fully non-transparent window, or opaque window, rather. Because you could just see them on the light background, so it worked.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Anyways, folks, there's your tweaks and fixes for this week, unless there's anything else you'd like to throw in there, Dave?
Nope, I think that covers it.
Okay. So, Summer Summit brought out an idea that we could be getting an update called the Skilling Pets. The Skilling Pets. And it just so happens that Skilling Pets are going to be released this summer. So, there was a post made by Mod Ollie, and they had to make a change to the upcoming summer release cycle because the Shattered Worlds PVM minigame, I guess it can be called, that was supposed to come out this August, was not ready, and they weren't going to have the time to get it ready for the summer that they wanted to, so they're moving it to the back burner for later this year. So this is, of course, developed by The Watch, and this is also coming from the team who worked on God Wars Dungeon 2 and Telos, who is the solo boss coming out in a couple of weeks. So rather than leaving, you know, a huge gaping hole in the schedule this summer, and allowing Shattered Worlds to be polished a little bit more, well, they are bringing out the Skilling Pets this summer, which was apparently exceptionally highly voted in the 2017 survey. So, a full roster of pets for non-combat skills that are going to be launching as overrides. So, basically, Skilling Pets have taken the place of Shattered Worlds, and they are saying that we hope you understand the need to postpone Shattered Worlds to give it the attention it needs to become truly great. So I don't think people are going to be upset about this, given how highly rated the Skilling Pets were. So
yeah, I think they really killed two birds with one stone here, because you know they're delivering content that we really do want, obviously, but they're also you know, being transparent about the development, and they're not, you know, just releasing something that isn't finished. And I don't know if it's a reflection on the community as a whole sort of maturing, but I was sort of browsing through the you know, first few pages of the forum post, and you know, a lot of people were, you know, accepting of that, and you know, they were appreciative that, you know, they're not going to just release something if it's not finished. And I think it's becoming more obvious within the community that, you know, we're all sort of appreciating that gesture more and more, as you know, especially after Invention happened. You know, sure, take the extra couple months, get it done right, and then release it. You know, don't feel like you have to just pump something out every 2 weeks, because you know that's definitely where the quality can suffer if it does.
Yeah, and this post only has 3 pages worth of replies on it, so it hasn't really got that much highlighting throughout the RS community. So it's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is when the wider RS community hears about this. So, and, you know, I was kind of hoping that this would have to wait until next year and they could bring this in with the prestige system and use your XP to level these pets up and maybe make them actual pets rather than just overrides, but I guess that's not going to be happening at this point.
Right.
Though, as I said on the Summer Summit and everything leading up to it, a concern I do have with this, now that we know it's happening for sure, is that I don't want certain skills to be turned into a grind fest for the pure point of getting pets, which I think that there is a certain group of people out there who do grind bosses for the pets. So I just don't know if that's the right thing for skilling, or if there's going to need to be much grinding done on the skilling side of this, or maybe it's going to be through some kind of milestone. Obviously, we don't have all the answers to that yet, but I think that's something that we all need to be worried about, is the PVM kind of grind coming into the skilling. Granted, you know, skilling deals with bank standing and whatnot, but it's not a RNG fest in order to get a certain item from your skilling. You're always doing skilling for a certain known number of repetitions in order to get a certain amount of XP. We don't have any kind of random grind stuff in skilling aside from the rocks. So I just hope that this doesn't go too far down that track.
Right.
So... all right. Well, that's definitely something to look forward to, and it's going to be very interesting to see what all the pets look like and what you have to do in order to get them. Also this week, a bit of a preview on the mining and smithing rework, something that was teased to be coming out in July, or rather not July, but it's been teased for quite some time, and it's going to be coming in the final quarter of this year. And, well, we learn more about it this week with a huge reveal of what things are ultimately going to look like with this. And I think so far what we have is encouraging. So there's going to be two distinct reworks, one for mining and one for smithing. First thing, of course, with mining is the levels are going to be adjusted. And they're going to be kind of in tune with what you need to wear the items currently. So, for example, iron will be 10, coal 20, mithril 30, addy 40, rune 50 in order to mine them. And they'll be adding new ores at level 60, 70, and 80, and 90. So there's still going to be reason to level up and do that. They're going to be taking the random nature out of getting ores and making it so that it's not a competition between you and other players. So ores will have a certain capacity, and then once that capacity is gone, the ore will disappear. Pickaxes are all going to mine at the same speed, but a higher tiered pickaxe means more damage will be done to that rock, therefore depleting it faster and getting you XP faster. Rocks will also have a certain penetration value, and as will pickaxes. So if you exceed that penetration value, you will have a higher chance of getting the ore out of that rock. So with that being said, that's kind of what they have in mind for mining, in addition to a number of other things, including the ability for them to, say, maybe on at some point have dual-wielding pickaxes or two-handed pickaxes, and a mining shaft's explorable kind of distraction and diversion thing, which would give you experience. So it'd be basically like Dungeoneering, except solely focused on mining. Mm-hmm. So that's the mining
sort of
side.
The sinkhole model.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think of what we just announced there?
I really like it. It's definitely a long time coming, and I'm really, 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 really glad that they are sort of showing their progress. And actually, I wasn't expecting, you know, on the first reveal, I wasn't expecting this much information. You know, usually we get a couple slides of this is kind of what we want to do. This is how we're thinking about doing it. And then, you know, 9 times out of 10, we sort of never hear about it again. We've heard about this at multiple RuneFests before on, you know, what they kind of want to do in terms of, you know, level rebalancing. But this time, I am very happy with the information we're provided. We're provided with artwork. You know, we're provided with, you know, actual names of ores, showing the concrete values of what they're trying to, you know, scale each level to, so we can sort of have an idea. You know, they've said, you know, oh, we want to rebalance levels. Well, you know, this time we're sort of seeing the framework of, you know, where they're going with that. You know, people didn't know if, oh, are we going to bring Rune down to 70? We're going to bring Rune down to, you know, now we see 50 is Rune. And
right.
Granted, it will, you know, it's possible to change. But I think that the core is going to stay where it's at. And seeing the, you know, the new names and the concepts as developed as they are for being this early on really shows promise.
Yeah.
So I think this has been, you know, very monumental in terms of reveals, I guess.
Yeah, you have Oracle Ore at level 60, which is essentially Dragon. Necrite at 60, which is, or 70 rather, which is Barrows. Invictum at level 80, and Aetherium at level 90. So a whole bunch of new ore to get. And an interesting change also in the mining mechanics is that once you deplete the capacity of the rock down to zero, you'll get the bulk of the mining XP and one guaranteed ore as long as you've met the threshold of damage. And they want capacity to be per player, as I was mentioning as well. So there's going to be no more competing on that side of things, which is just excellent. So very good on the mining front. And now moving over to the smithing front here. Levels are once again going to be adjusted to be relatively the same as what you need to wear them and what you need in the mining side of things. There's going to be the standard smithing and then what they're calling masterwork smithing. So standard smithing is as you have it now. The XP will be increased. However, the resource costs will also be increased with this. New items will be added for level 70 to 99. And the bulk of these will include helmets, plates, legs, shields, and scimitars. So that's standard smithing. And then at masterwork smithing, which is level 70 plus available, you will have better experience and better stats for the items you receive. So there will be a way to smith armor and weapons that are actually useful to us in game. Now the question that always comes up with this is how is the level going to be linked, you know, compared to the level you get for PVM armor? Unfortunately, they said that PVM armor will still be, you know, the best in class here in terms of armor protection, which I think is unfortunate. I think they should be on equal footing. But the example they gave is that if you have a masterwork level 70 armor, that'll be the equivalent of a level 63 PVM set as it's currently balanced in the early prototype. So, of course, this could all change going forward.
Right, but, and I think that's sort of, I guess, their way of not necessarily equaling it out, but just making it easier to sort of get that sort of gear. I know in other MMOs, that's sort of the case. You know, you can craft gear, but that's pretty much make it to where, you know, it's viable to fight whatever monster it is that drops a better version of it. You know, I'm not saying I agree with it, but I can sort of see, where they're taking that. So, I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, as Shane has said, I'd still like to see it completely balanced just to sort of even the playing field between play styles.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see why they don't do that. They put a lot of work into the graphics and, you know, the rewards that come from PVM. And in some ways, PVM, I guess, has been defined as the end game for RS, which I never thought I'd hear myself saying. But it seems like that's what end game people do once they've maxed and, you know, have done all the quests and completionists and whatnot. So I guess it makes sense that that's been happening. But, I mean, I don't know. I do think that there needs to be some kind of equal playing field here for PVM and smithing, because that's what the smithing skill should be designed to do. It should be designed for the self-sufficient person who inevitably at some point doesn't necessarily need to be level 70, but I would even be happy with if at level 90 masterwork smithing, you had the ability to make something equivalent to, you know, a tier 85 armor that you get from a PVM drop.
Right. Or even 99 for that matter. If they really want to.
Or 99. True.
Yeah. If they really want to. That could be your big perk other than a cape. Once you hit 99, you have a 100% efficiency
rate. And then there would
be
total reason to have 99 smithing once again.
Exactly.
And now just imagine if you could sell these. They said that the standard stuff will have the potential for profit, so I don't know if that means that masterwork smithing won't be tradable, but we'll have to wait and see on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, good stuff with what they have here. Another interesting point was that smithing will inject fewer items into the economy but maintain XP rates as it is right now. So I guess that's the emphasis on masterwork smithing at level 70 plus. So,
yep.
Very neat. So should be interesting to see what happens when we learn more about this as this update is fleshed out. So there's a link to the full 13-minute video that Jagex put up on YouTube about this. You can give it a watch and look at the concept art, or I just was even playing through some of it here on the video version of the podcast, which you can find at youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. All right. Anything else on smithing that you'd like before we go?
Nope. I think that pretty much covers it. I mean, that's definitely kind of what we were all expecting and a little bit more. So can't complain about that. And I'm really excited to see how it all gets tweaked and implemented towards the end of the year. So,
all right. Well, I won't talk too much about this next one, but a developer blog featuring the arc and the narrative mechanics that they're going to use has been put up. It's quite a long one, so I'll let you guys read that on your own. But it's worth saying that some of the Ports characters will be used there, but also some of the other Ports characters that might have been mentioned in passing when developing Ports voyages won't be used because, well, they were just never plainly intended to be used with this. So, it should be interesting to see what is going to be happening here. And there's no full-length quest, and instead they'll be creating a number of mini-quests. So that's some of the stuff that's going to be brought to us when the arc arrives. So
should be good.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do hope so. Because, I mean, it just didn't feel like going to the Eastern Lands was right at the time based on what we knew from Ports. So,
right.
Anyways, moving on to the questions now. You want to take the first one from Wiley?
I will. All right, from Wiley. Hey guys, Wiley time. Pardon me. With augmentable defenders coming out on Monday, already out by the time of the podcast, what do you think the ideal perks for them will be? Armor perks or weapon perks? I personally believe the Brassican perk is best for them. Also, in regards to Kindred Spirits, is it possible that the mysterious figure Sliske was talking to was a sea creature from the book we found? Doesn't seem like Zeros' style to use someone he excommunicated. Thank you for the show. And Wiley with the cabbage reference. Got to appreciate that.
Of course, of course. I kind of alluded to this when we were talking about defenders and how they can take either an armor or weapon gizmo. So you pretty much got the best of both worlds here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say armor because you already have weapon gizmos. Unless there's a weapon gizmo that can really help you out.
Right. I think kind of the whole point of the defender is getting best of both worlds. So the way I see it is you're getting the damage from the weapon, and then, you know, the defense side of it is probably going to be magnified by a defensive ability or defensive perk, rather, that you put on there. So I can't say for sure which perk will be best. I can say that defensive will probably be the best type. Again, it really comes down to what you're fighting. If you're doing it for Slayer, because obviously, you know, Slayer perks are going to differ a little bit from bossing. You know, you're not going to have the same defensive perk on Virago as you would going to kill Dark Beasts. So it really is kind of, you know, back and forth. But I think it's safe to say, you know, just sort of viewing this as a concept, the defensive is really going to bring that defensive aspect to the defender, which is definitely the spirit of the entire piece of gear in itself. So,
yeah. I mean, just looking back at the perks list and what I was thinking when this first came out, I would definitely now go for biting if I was leveling up and using a defender, because the biting perk does give you 2% extra chance to critically hit opponents. Mm-hmm. So imagine this. So you take biting on your defender, and your, let's just say your defender is level 70. It's a Barrow's defender, right?
Right.
So you're kind of in this for the long haul with your Barrow's defender because it doesn't give you as much XP. So rather than siphoning it off at level 10, you want to siphon it off at level 12. So I call that a long haul perk. So therefore you take biting on that because you don't necessarily want to go with something else on your weapon like Enlightened, which is 3% extra item XP gained per rank up to 9%. So let's just say you have, a tier 85 weapon that you're siphoning every so often, or maybe you are able, you know, to just use something that is in its 80s and you can just disassemble it every time at level 10. Then the smart choice on that would be to plop Efficient down on that, mm-hmm. assuming it had one gizmo slot, or rather one, what's the word I'm looking for? One gizmo shell? I don't know. I forget what the correct term is. But I would go with definitely Enlightened on that one. And also, maybe, depending on how you feel about charges, Efficient, I think, also looks good. But once again, it's entirely based on your play type. So I think that it comes down to what you want. But if you were using a level 70 defender, I think most definitely I would probably go biting, because I'm assuming that this 2% chance to critical hit is related to your entire character and not just that one weapon.
Right.
Which, I mean, if it was the one weapon, then you might want to use it on your main. But I'm just assuming this because your critical chance is, of course, governed by stats on your character. So that's just an assumption that I'm making right there. Let's see. So those are the two perks that I definitely think are good if you're just going for invention. Now, there's other things that you can do. There's one that decreases the charge time of Guthix's Blessing, which is the Butterfly Healing Ultimate. So that might be interesting if you prefer to heal that way, as another one you could take on your defender. If you've got, for example, the damage perks on your main weapon already. So, you know, once again, I think that now that you have the option on your defender, you could look into ones that basically are that you wouldn't have had the ability to look at before, because Guthix's Blessing, controlled by the Brief Respite perk, is an armor perk rather than a weapon perk, which you couldn't have been able to take before, and you might already have other armor perks. So that's kind of the way I'm thinking on this, and hopefully this has been useful to you.
Good insight.
And yeah, I mean, it could have also been Zautak that he was talking to in that quest. Though I wouldn't put it past Zaros to not communicate with Sliskay directly, knowing that Zaros, what he says isn't exactly what he always does. Yeah. So even though he might be trying to do something publicly, he's working a different way to achieve something or something similar to that behind the scenes. So that's why I think it could be Zaros that he was actually talking to there. And that fits kind of nicely with the narrative I have in mind for the ending of this quest series. But, you know, it could entirely be Zautak, and, you know, Zautak could ultimately swoop in under control of Sliskay or somehow and provide the deus ex that Jax is always so famous for using in final questing plot lines. So, yeah. But entirely possible it could be that. But I'm going to keep myself in the Zaros camp. Alrighty. You have anything else on that one, Dave?
Nope, I don't think so.
Okay. Next one is from Tyler. Hi, all. What's your favorite class that you took at any level of education? Also, what's your favorite Shaneism? Shane can help if you're confused. What is Shaneism, Dave? Keep up the great work, Tyler.
Well, I'll start with the best one. My favorite Shaneism. I don't know if you could consider this a Shaneism, but I think he's sort of made it famous within the community, and it's probably going to drive a lot of people mad because I'm going to sort of reopen it. Is the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I think we're probably one of the only ones in the community that sort of, you know, understand what that means. But I always, you know, I always enjoyed whenever that was mentioned. It always got a rise out of people. So that's probably my favorite Shaneism. And then I'm going to do a little bit of a plug for our RSVNB Discord. For those of you that are into Shaneisms, we have a Shaneism bot in the Discord that gets fired off quite a bit, you know, whenever we're playing Overwatch or just sort of hanging out. So if you haven't already, check it out. It's definitely a good time, but it's as much Shaneisms as you can handle. And you can call that one out enough. Just try not to do it too much because you might get kicked, but
yeah,
within moderation.
The more things change, the more they stay the same was used because the community always had the same reaction to the same kind of Jagex updates, mm-hmm. and they thought they were reacting to something new, but it was always the same thing, no matter how much the content of the news post changed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, all right. Oh, favorite class. That's a hard one. You have this, Dave?
You know, I got two of them, I guess. I'll do the cop out and I'll just name two of them. I'll divide this up actually. First, my favorite core classes have always been math, and it's kind of funny because I hated math up until about sixth grade, I guess it was fifth grade or so. Up until I understood it, and once I understood it, it clicked, and it's been my favorite ever since. It's really amazing on you know, how much your teacher or professor, how much of a difference they make, you know, in terms of accessibility, you know, just sort of getting the concept into my head. It's fun, like, oh my gosh, you know, this is so concrete. This is just, it's always this way. It's like, I love this. That'd be my favorite core class. In terms of specialized classes, I would have to say it's split between computer-aided drafting and programming. And for those of you that don't know, you know, computer-aided drafting or CAD, you know, it's obviously within my career field of architecture. But that also encompasses 3D modeling, you know, some graphics programs as well. I sort of grouped that all together. But I took a few of those classes in high school, and that ultimately determined, you know, my career choice. And you know, I really like those sort of classes. And I also took a few programming classes in high school as well. But I did not pursue that necessarily as a career, but it's definitely sort of developed as a hobby. And we'll get to it a little bit later in tech news. But You know, I'm pretty self-taught in a lot of the languages I know, and it's really made it fun to sort of explore different languages after being exposed to those couple classes in high school. So yeah, I would say those two are my favorite specialized, and then, you know, sort of the catch-all between those two is math. I have a feeling I wouldn't enjoy those two specialized classes without having the enjoyment for math. So those are my favorite classes, and I'm sure I'm probably in the minority because I know a lot of people hate math, but anyway.
Well, I mean, it depends what kind of math you're doing too. And I have a philosophy that anything that you're doing that requires a calculator, you can use a calculator for, should be called arithmetic. Because real math, you don't really need a calculator for, but that's a story for a different day. But my favorite classes, high school side, were always physics and math. But I think two of the most interesting classes that I ever took as options, just, you know, for some odd reason, the program required us to take, you know, general science and arts options, which was, you know, really strange because the arts people never had to take science options. The science option was geology of the solar system, which basically covered the similarities and differences that you would find between planets in our solar system and what this tells us about the creation of the solar system and how you can study all that stuff from Earth based on samples and observations and whatnot. Right. Another class that you think you know a lot about, but you don't until you do it or look into it yourself, and that was pre-Confederation Canadian history. Now, of course, I can say this to all you Americans out there, that if you haven't and you have the option, I would highly recommend taking a university level history of your country class, whether, you know, it's pre-Civil War or post-Civil War or, you know, pre-Revolutionary War. Just take a history class in university focused on your country, and you'll definitely get a whole different depth to it than you got in, you know, high school or junior high or something like that. And that was really great. So there's that as well. You ever do any history or anything like that?
Yeah, I did a couple advanced placement history courses in high school. Can't really say it was my thing. It was definitely interesting, but I guess it just didn't keep my interest as much as other things did.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
My favorite thing to do with history is to, you know, look at something that happened, you know, 700 years ago or 1300 years ago, for example, and then note how that had an effect today with the current things happening. And I do kind of the same thing. Or I will be continuing to do the same thing for Clan Quest with RuneScape history, believe it or not. The first one I did, a little 500-word short thing in our monthly Clan Quest magazine, was one on the importance of moments in history relating to RuneScape and how NXT was one of those moments. So being June, you can guess what I'm going to discuss in the next one that comes out in July. Favorite core class would, there's just so much in computer science that's great that I could list too many of them, so we'll just pass on that, actually.
And it's funny that you mention space, like, and the reason I didn't say that is because, unfortunately, I never really had the opportunity to take that sort of class, because believe me, if that was an option, I would have definitely taken that. I took sort of a university level physics class, but that was pretty much just, you know, an advanced math, you know, just dealing with forces and calculations, not so much, you know, solar system.
Kind of boring stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I actually had to teach myself because I couldn't understand my professor's thick accent. So anyway, yeah, I definitely would have mentioned that because that's one of my fields of extreme interest. But like I said, I think the last formal class I really had on anything, you know, space related, was junior high. And it was funny because, my teacher at the time said, you know, enjoy this while you can, because this will be the last time you'll ever be required in a science class to study the solar system or weather. And he was right. I enjoy both. And I really hadn't seen any sort of, you know, higher level class than that. Especially in my field of choice.
Yeah. Okay, if I had to pick a computer science class, it would come down to basic human-computer interaction. That is the the study of how humans use computers and how we can better build software to represent that, or hardware architecture.
Yeah, hardware architecture is very interesting, and I'll go into that a little bit later when we talk about what we're doing. But anyway,
we'll
save that.
Last question from Colton. So, happy birthday, RSVNB update. You all reach 11 as I become a 10-year veteran. What a wondrous time. Now for questions. First off, I've just been married. Congratulations, Colton, if you weren't all aware.
Yes.
My lovely wife, however, is not a scaper. Given the knowledge that she is neither a scaper nor an avid video game player, how can I get her to join us in our collective addiction? Okay, second, what do you guys think is the future of PVM? By this I mean that it seems like we constantly get boss after boss released, always dropping new gear and offering a new challenge. However, this just constant cycle results in countless bosses, once seen as challenging, becoming dead, their gear having been framed to hell, and profit margins being minimal at best in comparison to newer mobs. Why does so much dev time go into this endless loop instead of actually revitalizing old skill and content that lays dead all around us? Is this just how it must be, or is there a better way? Last, what is the best to be eaten on a baked potato? Here's to many more happy years in Gilinor from Colton. Well, I think that if you wanted to get her to join us in this collective addiction, then I think you could probably start off small, and maybe RS Chronicle would be a good Monday night evening game you two could play together.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's no tablets right now, but I mean, once tablets come out, the two of you just sit on a couch and away you go. There's Chronicle. Or if you're looking at RuneScape, I guess what you do is you just focus on a certain skill that is relaxing. And I think that definition depends on the person, because I know there's lots of people that play RuneScape and they don't always fit the mold of what you hear on this podcast. So
right.
There's got to be something in RS that will interest almost anyone, I think, as a form of relaxation. So that's the direction I would approach it to. But as for video gaming, I don't know, maybe that's something both of you need to work on together, because I know I've been hounding Colton for quite some time to pick up some of the games that we play around here. So Rocket League would be fun with two people, I think.
Oh yeah,
you could play doubles.
There you go. Play doubles, or you could 1v1 each other and see who gets to cook dinner.
and you only need one computer for that, because you can do split screen on Rocket League.
Oh, that's true. Yep, just so plug in your laptop, get an HDMI, and put it on your TV, and there you go. You could still have the couch. So
yeah, and that's something we do at RSBNB as well. So
indeed,
there's some options right there. Not sure if you have any others, Dave, but
honestly, I would say, first of all, I would ask you, does she play any phone games? Because a lot of that sort of stuff can be transposed to what RS is and what a lot of other games are. You know, does she play any of the Farmville type stuff? Does she play, you know, Clash of Clans, any sort of that, or any sort of, you know, game like that? You know, that's in the, you know, raw sense of the term, that's, you know, video game. But, you know, what I have always sort of noticed, especially, you know, back in the day, is, you know, everybody, I mean, even the people you wouldn't think would be into video games, they all played the Facebook game. They all played Farmville. They all played these, you know, Command and Conquer sort of social games, you know, with their friends. But then they hear you play RuneScape, you're like, oh my gosh, you're such a nerd, da da da. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's really the same concept. You know, you build up your kingdom or whatever. You know, you level stuff up, you make your guys more powerful, you know, you fight enemies and stuff. It's really kind of the same deal, but people don't really realize that because they just see it in a different light. But I think, you know, if she's into any, you know, mobile games, you know, Game of War or all the, you know, big sort of Age of Empires-esque games that are out there, I wouldn't expect her to, you know, play any of that stuff that's, you know, that intricate. But anyway, you know, if she plays any sort of that game, I think it can be slowly transitioned, you know, into Scape or, you know, other sort of AAA titles. But also you can sort of compare it to any other hobbies she has. At least I think that would be a way for her to understand, you know, what you find so appealing about it. And that might make it appealing to her. You know, if she likes to, I honestly have no idea, you know, any of her hobbies, just be, you know, well, that's kind of like how it is with me. And, you know, it can be sort of a thing where, you know, she plays RS with you or plays video games with you. And then, you know, you can, you know, do whatever she likes to do with her, and it'd be sort of a trade off. And, you know, both of you might end up enjoying the other's activities, and there you go. It's a win-win. So that's sort of my advice, but, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not a marriage counselor. So.
And then comes the question about PVM, as we were just discussing the mining and smithing rework.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's precisely why I want mining and smithing to essentially be on par with PVM, because I think the two should complement each other. I think that if you want the best from PVM, you have to have some kind of investment in smithing, runecrafting, or fletching. Crafting for any of these skills that creates armor and whatnot mm-hmm. for combat. Because that is what, when RS2 came out and runecrafting was brought into game, we were told runecrafting is here so that mages can make their own ammunition. Mm-hmm. Fletching, same reason. The fletchers are going to make the ammunition for the rangers. The crafting people are going to make the enhancing jewelry and armor for the rangers. So that kind of link between skilling and combat has been lost over the years. And I think reestablishing that, starting with mining and smithing, would ultimately be a great thing to make skilling great again, like it always used to be. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely the direction I hope to see them go. And I've said it numerous times before on the show, the best, you know, reward to get from an upcoming boss, the solo boss, for example, would be that you get, you know, some resource from him in addition to, you know, like you get the malevolent energy or whatever from the barrels.
Exactly.
And then you get another resource, and then you combine that with a resource that's already in game as it is right now, say just rune ore or rune bars, because that's what we got. Mm-hmm. You combine those three things. Two things from the boss, one thing from in-game. You use your level in a non-assistable, non-tradable manner. You create the armor that you get, and you get a superior piece of armor than you would if you just received the armor as a drop from the boss. You do that, you have skilling as an option, as a sole option, as defined in the mining and smithing rework, to just do it and level up as you go and, you know, just solely get your armor and weapons from smithing for a bit of a penalty, or you throw some combat into it and combine it with this skill, and you get a super form of armor that's better than anything you get from the drop, and that encourages people to level up their skill and take part in this skill.
It takes away from, you know, the high-end elitist community of just PVM, you know, it just becomes Virago Scape. And, you know, to get away from that, you really have to sort of pull people away from that and make something else better.
And to be clear, we have nothing against people that do that.
It's
monotonous time and time again, seeing that as the sole thing people use to get armor, and Jagex just keeps inserting it for some reason. I don't know why, and it seems Colton doesn't know why, it seems, but I think that if you took every NPC or PVM update, brought into game, and ensured it had a skilling component with it, you would, in essence, be developing the skills along the way. It's like a policy that people have in some governments with raising taxes or adding new regulations. You want to bring a new regulation in? Okay, for, well, every new regulation you bring in, you need to remove two existing regulations.
Right.
So I think that you could do something like that, where for every piece of PVM content comes in, it needs to have a link to a skill. And then doing that, then people who are, you know, progressing along the bossing progression path, which I think is real, starting with the Queen Black Dragon, then moving up you know, through the various things, there's still reason for you to hunt this drop or, you know, raise your skills to do that. So I think that they could do that with maybe making some of the things a bit more common. Mm-hmm. So that way then you don't need to rely on the GE.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will, provide some clarity on the way I'd like to see things go, but I don't know if that is at all possible in game. We'll have to see what the results are from the summer survey, asking whether or not PVM and skilling should be relatively equal in terms of profit. So,
indeed.
What's best to be eaten on a baked potato?
Do I have to pick one? Because I always eat mine with cheese and bacon.
Oh my God, that's disgusting.
How about you?
I actually prefer mashed potatoes if I can, because I do not like the skin on potatoes.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. No, okay, if I had to choose, I would obviously choose mashed potatoes. But the question, if I had to answer, is usually, butter or bacon or cheese or something along that nature. But
okay.
Shane does not approve, so...
I'll just let you go with that, and I'll just say that I really only eat baked potatoes. Even if they are baked, given to me, I will mash them with my fork and then just eat them as a mashed potato and try and avoid the skin. So, but I can tell you that my favorite mashed potato is butter / margarine with bacon bits, pepper, and a little bit of onions and garlic thrown in.
That sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Well, thank you, Colton, for those questions and everyone else as well. If you want to send us your questions, you can do that. Email us questions at rsbnb.com. You can send text questions or audio questions there. You can also call or text to 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And finally, you can DM us on Twitter at RSBNB. All right, so tech news, starting off with E3. So E3 is always an interesting thing because there's always the competition between people to see who can, you know, put out the best conference and whatnot, and who can have the best reveals. So what did you think of what Microsoft had on offer this year?
I was absolutely blown away, and honestly, I can say that ever since the release of Xbox One in 2013, I guess it was the year after it came out. So I guess it was 2014 when they had their first real big lineup of Xbox One games. That was a really good year in terms of games and exclusives. This year, I think, is the best so far of this generation in terms of Xbox, in terms of pretty much every aspect of the conference. With the games, so many exclusives. You have Gears of War 4, which is highly anticipated, especially by me and a few other members of RSBNB that I know of. Forza Horizon 3, which is huge. I know it's not incredibly popular in mainstream, but Forza is one of my favorite franchises. I'm really into the racing genre. I really, really, really liked Forza 4. Forza 5 was great. I got that as a release title with a 1. And then obviously between 4 and 5 was Horizon, and that sort of came away from the sort of precision and motorsport aspect and more of the social sort of car meet and street racing aspect. I really like that. Horizon 2 came out. That was amazing. And I honestly didn't expect them to sort of beat a dead horse per se. I didn't know if they were going to keep up the Horizon franchise. But anyway, they are. Horizon 3 looks awesome. It's taken full advantage of the graphics of the Xbox One. What's the other? ReCore looks really good. We saw a little bit of that last year.
What about Halo Wars 2?
Halo Wars 2. I know that's been actually very anticipated. And it's nice to see that they're bringing that out. I'm trying to think of the other ones off the top of my head. Those are the big ones that
and
stuck out.
Microsoft had a lot of games this year.
They really did. And they were all big games, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a few years where they've kind of just sort of filled the gaps. But I think these are all of their, you know, big reveals were all I would consider AAA titles, for sure. But anyway, yeah, I think they really nailed it with the exclusives. In terms of hardware,
Xbox One S and Project Scorpio. The One S is coming out this summer in August. Basically, the S stands for slim. It's a slim white Xbox with the same specs that we have now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this is really nice. I'm surprised it actually came out this soon, but I think it's an excellent move. It's nice to see that they're, you know, staying on top of it and they're sort of shrinking stuff down, less bulky.
I mean, the base price is going to be $299. Mm-hmm. Now, I assume that this uses the current Kinect, so you don't need to get a new Kinect with this.
Correct.
So, basically, at the price of $299, someone can basically say that, oh, this is basically the same price as me upgrading my smartphone every 2 years.
Exactly.
So there's that. And then Project Scorpio is going to support 4K and virtual reality coming in fall 2017.
Yeah, and this is crazy. I think this is what blew everyone away. I don't really think anyone was expecting this. I could be wrong. I don't know if you heard any speculation within the community.
No.
Yeah, this has been huge. Everybody sort of thought, you know, when the reveal and the trailer was playing, they're just kind of like, oh, okay, well, this is just sort of a wrap-up of the conference, because this was the last thing that they talked about. You know, it's kind of a wrap-up of the conference. It's showing the Xbox One, you know, slim. And then, you know, they start naming off or rattling off tech specs, and there's, you know, talking about 6 teraflops of memory and stuff. And everyone is just like, what? And this is like, I would almost really consider this like next gen, like not this current gen.
We've
had like a 10-year gap from the 360 to the One and from the PS3 to the PS4. You know, it's
2013 to 2017, 4 years.
Yeah, approaching the third year now, and we're already getting, you know, our first developer that's really pushing next gen. You know, everyone thought that we were going to have, you know, sort of these base consoles well into, you know, 2020 and beyond. And, you know, Microsoft here came out and pretty much, you know, tripled the Xbox One's power and, you know, capabilities, and is already supporting 4K and VR natively. And this is just, this is really huge in every sense of the word. And I think it sort of left everybody in shock. And I know that Sony is probably shaking in their boots. But here's the thing that I really admired and enjoyed about this E3 is this has been one of the only E3s that I can remember where it hasn't just been a bunch of pot shots at each other and just low blows. They sort of did their own thing and they did it well. With that being said, I think Microsoft really, I guess, hammered it home and sort of secured, you know, that sort of, I don't want to say dominance, because I wouldn't say either one is better, but I definitely think their footsteps are paving the way. And, you know, it really took the community by surprise. And I'm really excited to see, you know, where this goes and what the capability of games are with this new hardware and whatnot. So anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And something that needs to be underscored with the One S and the Project Scorpio is that Project Scorpio, this is going to be Microsoft's entrance into consumer VR, HoloLens and whatnot aside. The One S and Scorpio will continue to run Xbox One games. So if you have an Xbox One game right now, it will run on these new consoles.
Yeah.
Now, for granted, it might not look as good as it could, but it'll still work. And eventually, there's going to be a lifespan to games where they'll continue to run and work on older consoles, much like can happen on the PC, which I think is excellent. Because you don't want to, you know, purchase a console and then have it be obsoleted in 5 to 6 years, which is what used to happen. So with Microsoft continuing this, it signals that if you purchase an Xbox One today and you purchase an Xbox One game library, for the foreseeable future, just like with Windows 10, you will be able to continue to use those games as you will with your backwards compatible Xbox 360 titles as well. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think Microsoft doesn't get enough credit for with this E3 and in general with the direction they're taking the Xbox ecosystem.
Right.
Also, another thing that stood out to me was the Xbox Play Anywhere feature, which they're doubling down on even more so this year, so that, you know, if you have a game on your Xbox One going forward, providing the developer opts into it, you'll be able to play and continue that game on your Windows computer. The games that were mentioned this year, the ones you mentioned, ReCore, Forza Horizon 4, and Halo Wars 2, are going to make use of this functionality, so you can play it on your Xbox One or your Windows computer, which is just an excellent thing for Microsoft to do in terms of the Xbox ecosystem. Because where has Windows 10 gone for gaming? It hasn't really taken off yet. And by making the Xbox the core plank of Microsoft's gaming platform, they have something here that is known throughout the entire gaming community and can be used to bring people into the new Windows 10 environment, which also just brings people into the Windows platform. So I think for me, Xbox Play Anywhere is the big thing from this.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and I mean, lots of people say that, oh, Sony won this year based on their announcements and whatnot, but I ultimately think that having an ecosystem that is so linked with the Windows PC ecosystem really does a lot for you in terms of gameplay, because who doesn't have a Windows PC, right?
Exactly.
So, very happy to hear about that, but lots of great stuff going forward here. Were you able to have a look into what Sony brought on this year?
But most of the stuff that I recall have or just really highly anticipated games. I wouldn't say so much hardware. I think they announced something about a 4K capable, PlayStation 4 model, which was kind of talked about, and I think it was sort of.
I mean, you have to do that because 4K Blu-ray is also gaining steam, and Sony pioneered Blu-ray, so
sure. But, you know, just notable a few titles that were, you know, really were groundbreaking. I know everybody's really excited about Final Fantasy, I guess it's 15.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So I don't – that's not even a PlayStation exclusive, I don't believe. But, you know, obviously Sony has, you know, the – I wouldn't say exclusive rights, but, you know, they always show that sort of stuff on Sony's conference. Horizon Zero Dawn. This looks really cool. And this is one of the reasons on why, you know, I made a post earlier in the week saying that I'm going to be dusting off my PS4. This game looks great. This really, I think, is going to be a console selling exclusive, for lack of a better term. You know, it's such a different genre, and it looks absolutely gorgeous. For those of you that don't know, Horizon Zero Dawn, basically it has the theme of Native American sort of tribal, you know, hunters and huntresses. But basically it's in, you know, it's in that setting, but all of the animals and, you know, species are all sort of mech and robotic. So it's kind of like a robotic Jurassic Park dinosaur game mixed with Far Cry. I don't know. It's really hard to explain. You'll have to check it out. It looks awesome. But that was a really big one. We heard that we're slightly teased about it last year, but this we got a lot more, and it really looks to be shaping up quite well. The Last Guardian is kind of a kind of its own niche, but I know a lot of people were anticipating that. God of War is a huge one that's finally making a return after the three or four games that was sort of wrapped up. You know, they're coming out with a new one, so that was good. I think those were the main heavy hitters. Oh, Resident Evil 7, I believe, is another big one. And then Kojima's new horror game that he's developing was a big one. And I mean, all those together really, it's the most Sony's done in quite a while, you know, since the announcement of the, you know, PS4 and the whole price debacle and all that stuff. Their games
lineup
has
security on the platform and whatnot as well.
Exactly. But yeah, their game lineup has been you know, nothing short of lackluster the past few years. They've really focused on, you know, the independent titles and stuff like that. And, you know, that really hasn't taken off so much on the PS4 platform or just the Sony platform in general. So it's nice to see they kind of, I don't want to say they abandoned it, but they moved away from it. And, you know, this year's conference really, really showed that with all the AAA anticipated titles that they were, you know, so far into development with. So, you know, it's going to be really nice to sort of see that ecosystem of games and exclusives, you know, sort of come back into the market. So
yeah, Sony also apparently made a VR announcement. They're releasing the updated console in October rather than the summer for $399. It'll be capable of VR. That's happening this year. And also a whole bunch of new VR games for it, including Farpoint, futuristic first-person shooter, Star Wars Battlefront 10, Resident Evil Biohazard, Batman Arkham VR, and Final Fantasy VR also. So Sony is getting the jump on that this year. And it'll be interesting to see how the experiences are on this because, you know, we've had things this year be developed like Oculus Rift and Tango, like we mentioned last week, and Samsung's Cardboard VR and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what you can get for a $400 VR gaming experience from Sony.
Right.
Compared to, you know, a $1,700 VR gaming computer. So, should be interesting time going ahead.
Indeed.
But that's not the only conference that was in town this week. Apple had their annual Worldwide Developers Conference, in which this year they announced iOS 10 and Mac OS Sierra. It is not called OS 10 anymore, for those of you guys out there who insist it's OS X, but it's OS 10, and it will be Mac OS going to this fall. But iOS 10 is largely a maintenance and quality of life release, I would say, focusing on the Messages app and just a few little things around the system that is going to be improving the experience, such as, I mean, the lock screen notifications and whatnot as well are going to be improved, you know, improved keyboards and whatnot. The Siri API is also opened up to everyone with iOS 10. So very incremental for Apple this year, but I think that's what we've come to expect with these platforms. Did anything with iOS 10 jump out at you?
Not so much, but to be fair, I haven't looked too much into it. I like where they're going with the method. I like where they're going with the Messages app. I've always felt it's been a little restrictive in terms of what other phones can do.
Again,
I haven't done a ton of research.
I'm not saying it for that, but am I in the minority in feeling that the Messages application should just be a simple, you know, text-to-text-based chat thing with the capability of sending text messages, emojis, and maybe a picture every now and then? Or is that old-fashioned?
No, it's not old-fashioned. I just like seeing, you know, a little bit, I don't know, I felt like, and I think you can agree with me on this, that just overall, iOS has been sort of stagnant the past couple years in terms of not, you know, they've had under the hood improvements, but nothing really groundbreaking in terms of interface. Regardless if it's useful or not, you know, looking at some of the stuff with the, you know, crazy GIFs and, you know, emojis and stuff, am I going to use it? Probably not. But it's nice to see that they're still able to incorporate new features into it and, you know, keep it fresh. That's always nice. But other than that, there isn't really a huge thing that jumps out at me that is, you know, really going to make me excited to update. But it's always just nice to see progress. And, you know, from what I'm seeing right here, it definitely looks like they're going in that direction, which is nice to see after the past couple of years of not really doing too much that's been noticeable.
Yeah, and the reason they said they focused on Messages was that the Messages application is the most used application in iOS.
Mm-hmm. Easily.
Which makes sense. And then, I mean, some interesting things like Invisible Ink, where you can drag over an image or text in order to see what's been happening with that message, so you can kind of get a surprise whenever they move over it. Handwriting as well is going to be now capable there, and the same kind of live ink messages that you can send on the watch are going to be capable in Messages as well. So Going to be interesting to see if this encourages people to update their OS, because I know there's lots of people who feel that, oh, I don't need to update iOS every year, but because there's no new features I like. But the thing is, you stop getting security updates for iOS when the new one comes out, so you really should be updating every year.
Exactly.
Hardware aside, I know we were talking about this previously. You think any of this is enough to keep you looking at the iOS side of things?
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, keep an open eye. I don't want to jump the gun. I definitely still need to do my homework for sure. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see, like I said, it's nice to see that they're, you know, keeping on top of it and sort of, you know, advancing the system as, you know, one of the, you know, largest development or electronic development companies should. But yeah, it's definitely going to keep me interested. And like I said, I'll do my homework and it'll be an equal comparison. So we'll see.
Yeah. Too many people go off half-cocked when they're dealing with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Mac OS, Sierra, the main thing, of course, focusing this year is the release of Siri on OS 10, of course, related to the Open Siri APIs now on iOS. So there's that. And if you have a Mac and same thing goes, you should always update, providing you have software that's not going to break, though that's pretty rare on OS 10. Because you keep getting better security updates. So once again, not too much on the Mac OS side, except for maybe a little bit of a tighter linkage using iCloud. But even then, that's up for debate if people are going to be able to use something like that, because iCloud storage is so prohibitive with 5 gigs only free and it just being too expensive otherwise. We'll have to see what they do about that later this fall when it's released. But aside from that, it was a pretty quiet WWDC in terms of announcements.
Yeah.
Of course, there's also changes to watchOS and tvOS, improving the watch, which I still think is a very early device. We'll have to see what happens in hardware next before software. But there was one thing that really stood out this week for me, and that's an application that's going to be released on iOS 10 this fall, specifically for iPad, called Swift Playgrounds, which is a way of learning how to code in Swift, but it turns it into a game. Now, you and I were talking pre-show about this, and Apple has always had a place in education. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the olden days, there were ways to, you know, teach kids about procedural things and how to type on the computer keyboard using a logo application on early Macintoshes, which did teach some code, but it wasn't real serious code you could use to create applications. And that's what Swift Playground does, is it turns Swift code into a game, and then while you're playing this game, by writing code, you are essentially learning the Swift language. And the ability to learn a programming language at a young age is just like learning any other language at a young age. You learn this language, and then you know it, and then you can basically use it for anything from science all the way to computer science, IT, and computer engineering. So it's a really amazing thing if you can teach someone how to write code. And I think that's something that Apple definitely wants to get into the schools, which is severely lacking, mainly because of budget and whatnot. So if a school has an iPad program, they can bring this kind of program in. Then I'm sure this will spur some other kind of application on, say, a Chromebook or something, maybe even using the Swift language, because that's open source now. So basically, this Swift Playground is capable of using any kind of Swift code, from very basic, something that, you know, an 8-year-old or 9-year-old could do, all the way up to someone who is learning their first computer-based algorithms, like how to sort numbers or, you know, maybe create a simple interactive game. So Swift Playgrounds is going to go a long way to teaching people how to write code for this. So it's going to be really neat to see what you can do with this, and this is definitely going to be something I'm going to be playing around with when it comes out this fall.
Absolutely.
And I know you mentioned that you did enjoy writing code before, so I mean, if you have an iPad, this is something you could also look at.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I've just recently, in the past couple months, I've been teaching myself the C# language, and I find it very fun. And, you know, I've always been interested in, you know, Swift and Objective-C. I did a little bit, I read some literature on Objective-C a little bit, and it cross-referenced Swift quite a bit. And I don't want to say I was in the dark, but I don't think I was getting the, you know, full potential that I could have with knowing Swift. So this is way back when, you know, probably 5-6 years ago. You know, there wasn't too much on Swift, really, at least that I could find.
Yeah, Swift is new as of like 3 years ago.
So. Right. And, you know, ever since it's come out, I've been interested in it. And, you know, I've done some digging, and I understand some of the basics, and I've been wanting to, you know, really get into it, and, you know, especially into to the app development side of things. And, you know, I really like how accessible they're making this. I plan to know a lot more about Swift and how to code in Swift before this comes out, hopefully in the fall, provided my, my schedule allows. So, but, I'll be very interested to see when this comes out and, you know, sort of use it to test, you know, what I already know, and, hopefully learn a few new things. So I really like how accessible they're making this. So I'm definitely going to be playing around with
this. Yeah, it's really great, especially, I mean, if you're wanting to get into Swift, anyone before this comes out in the fall, last month I did to actually talk about the open source nature of Swift and a web-based Swift sandbox that IBM provides that allows you to basically learn how to do Swift online for free. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that, but it is really great. All right. Well, more on that later in closing. But final piece of tech news once again, relating to some unfortunate news on Reddit this past weekend. So as everyone knows, this Sunday we had the shooting in Orlando, the terrorist attack. In which 49 people have been killed so far and many more injured. And now, I mean, obviously the first thing people do in an event like this is look online for the news, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of people's biggest sources of news, rightly or wrongly, is Reddit and the r/news subreddit for this. And when this happened, people did not find what they were looking for in the r/news subreddit. The discussion got out of hand shortly after it began, so much so to the point that topics were being deleted, people were being suspended, and ultimately there are false accusations going on about what was actually happening, to the point where one of the r/news moderators had to be removed for very disruptive comments that he made to users. And basically what happened is that while this was going on and the situation was still developing, someone posted some news on r/news that was, in hindsight, correctly saying that the shooter was a Muslim. And of course, this is a ISIS-inspired terrorist attack. And because of this, r/news actually locked one of the topics and deleted subsequent topics of that nature. So whether or not they appeared to be wanting to do this, it ultimately looked as though that they were trying to censor the fact that this was an ISIS-inspired terrorist attack rather than something else, which is just downright horrible to do anytime you're talking about news, because you want to, you know, get the straight facts and you don't want to, you know, have a middleman's opinion on it, as was evidently happening here with Reddit. So this is just really unfortunate for Reddit. And it kind of goes in terms of what we were talking with a few weeks ago about how on any community on that website, you can get an echo chamber that can enforce any view, rightly or wrongly, and then people who bring in an alternate point of view get muzzled, which is exactly mm-hmm. what happened here. Yeah. And, you know, they said they've made mistakes about this, though they haven't outright said that they were censoring that. So it just became a really wishy-washy situation, and they lost a lot of subscribers over this. And the unintended consequence of it is that r/TheDonald, the subreddit for Donald Trump, actually became the news source, the trusted news source on Reddit for getting news about the Orlando terrorist attack, and was on the front page of the website, which surprised a lot of people and has actually spurred another series of actions by Reddit to, quote, increase the diversity of opinions on the front page of Reddit. So, I mean, it just goes into what we were saying a few weeks ago about everything that happens on that website and how when you're reading something on there, you really got to think about what kind of filters it's being moved through, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, there's not too much else to say on this. It's a really horrible situation that happened for something that is supposed to be focused on news and the news at that. So I would say once again that if you're looking for news or something related to what's going on in the world, there's plenty of other great places to hear about what's going on aside from Reddit.com. So
that's correct.
I much prefer Google News or Reuters or Associated Press. Just go straight to the sources for things like that, obviously, rather than, you know, going through websites that are going to censor and distort it. So once again, you have to have your eyes and ears open about what's going on websites like this.
Indeed.
Which, I mean, I knew something like this was capable. I didn't want to jump up and down when this was happening because it's a horrible situation, but it's kind of what we predicted will happen with this,
yeah,
right?
So, exactly.
But I don't know. I honestly think that it might be worth deleting your account on Reddit, providing you're not linked to a community that is small enough that you know everyone around you there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, just horrible what happened in Orlando, and it's a question that everyone needs to start asking is, I mean, when does this stop? And I don't think that news reporting like this is going to be providing a good discussion platform for that. So right now is the prime time for another platform that's community-based, like Reddit, to come up and say, hey, we're not going to be doing any of this. Here's how we're not going to do it, and here's how we're going to be held accountable. So I don't know if anything like that exists, but now is the time. So anyways, that happened, and once again, I didn't want to be talking about this because of the horrible nature of the story, but it did ultimately happen. So anyways, anything else on that, Dave?
Nope. I think we got it.
All right. Well, we're going to move right on now to other things this week. So in Skill of the Month this week for the crafting Skill of the Month, Parnassus is still in first place with 4.7 million crafting XP gained. Second place is Poison Nova with 1.2 million, and not too far behind him is And That's Bad with 1.1 million. And then, once again, not that far behind him in fourth is Sorensen57 with just over 1 million XP. So it's a very close race for second right now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the tail half of the month.
Neck and neck.
And obviously, hopefully, we'll hope for a resource gathering competition next month so we're not burning people out. Alrighty. Well, as I mentioned, relating to Swift, I did also talk about the key points of Apple's event this week, and it boils down to five things, being the Siri API, iMessage, deleting stock applications in iOS, Apple focusing on privacy, where others might have that as a secondary thought to the level Apple does, and then finally the Swift Playgrounds app. This has all been detailed in an Informer article called Apple's Steady Course, which you can find at informer.rsbnb.com. So it's basically what we can take from a relatively subdued WWDC conference keynote, and what this means for Apple and the platform going forward. So I would highly recommend anyone who feels that, oh, nothing happened here, to give this a read, because it signifies quite a lot, I think, and the maturity of both platforms, which is something we can be very proud of. Because I made the point, Windows 95 and XP, that's 7 years, 95 to 2001, whereas the iPhone first came out in 07, and it's been more than 7 years now. So we're well past what it took for Windows 95 to mature into XP for the iPhone.
Right.
So, anyways, give that a read. Alrighty, so what do we got for Achievements of the Week?
Achievements of the Week, we have Mandy got 99 divination on June 9th, so congratulations. That is awesome. That is one of my favorite skills, actually.
Yeah,
so,
it
kudos.
Is for me, too. I mean, there were lots of people that didn't like divination when I came out, but oh, it's just basically fishing, but the bank is only a few steps away.
Exactly. That's awesome.
Yep. So, congratulations on the 99 divination achievement. Okay, so I think we talked about this previously, but I have a pick of the week unless you've come up with anything in the moments since we started the show.
Nope, take it away.
Okay, so this week's pick of the week is an application for iOS. Now, you might remember a while back we had an application on pick of the week that was called Scanner Pro. And basically what this was a way of using your smartphone camera as a document scanner. And it would import it as a PDF, and it did a pretty good job of it. But, as with most things, new options come along. And one of the ones that I wanted to highlight this week is called Camera Lens. And this one is done by Microsoft. It's got a number of interesting presets. From business card to photo to document to whiteboard. And then basically what you can do with this is you can use your smartphone camera, and then once you take the photo of the document, it will automatically upload it to OneDrive, convert it to the proper PDF format, and then if it's, for example, a written text document that is, say, with, you know, just standard Times font, you will have essentially a PDF document that can be selected and worked from as if it was an actual PDF document printed from your computer. So I find that this works much better than Scanner Pro. And, I mean, yeah, it lacks things like Dropbox support and iCloud support. But at the end of the day, using OneDrive is a price to pay for being limited in terms of having better quality and capture dynamics from the application. So I would highly recommend anyone who is in school or maybe, you know, takes in a lot of business cards or just wants a way to bring documents that they have and into their digital devices to look at Camera Lens. And it's free on the iOS App Store. I'm sorry, it's called Office Lens. But that's the pick of the week. So
sounds cool. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna check that out.
Yeah, it's free in the App Store, so I would just recommend that you give it a look. And another great thing that it does better than the Scanner Pro is that Scanner Pro is always iffy on the borders of your document, whereas Office Lens, I feel, does a much better job than Scanner Pro did at that. So it's just basically a more mature version. And, you know, of course, Microsoft is able to put more into this because Microsoft has more money than Scanner Pro. So they can, you know, afford to just, you know, work on these little pet projects like that and give them out for free. So once again, it's called Office Lens for free on the iOS App Store. Doesn't need OneDrive. All right, so that's that. And I also have mentioned that this is an anniversary episode. Lots of people don't necessarily know what this anniversary is, but we do around here, don't we?
Oh, yes, we do.
It is the 11th anniversary of RSVNB Update. June 12th, 2005, we published the first episode of RSVNB Update, and that basically set the path going forward through all the different co-hosts that we've had and all of the RuneScape updates that we brought to you in our unique way, hopefully providing great insight, entertainment that you can't find anywhere else, which is why we do this. As I mentioned at the start of the year, it's something we do because we can provide an analysis of what's going on in RS with entertainment and maybe, just maybe, improve the RS community along the way, which for me is the primary reason of doing this. All you great listeners out there who listen every week, who message me in-game, submit questions, are a part of the RSBNB community, whether it be, you know, just through visiting us in the friends chat or visiting us on the forums or even playing games with us at PC Gaming. This has all been made possible, of course, by your guys' support after 11 years. So we are extremely grateful for the 11 years that you guys have given us through all the co-hosts, all the updates. I just wanted to say thank you to all of you.
Absolutely. Yes, you guys are awesome. Keep it up, because I know we're going to.
So. Yeah, because, I mean, without the listeners, there would be no point to doing this. And ultimately, we would be talking to an empty room. And if JX were to disappear, the same thing. So, I mean, it's a relationship that all three of us rely on, and all three parties, rather, update the listeners, and of course, JX. It just works so well, so thank you.
Yes, thank you indeed.
All right, so that means next week we're starting our 12th year, so before we move on to look after whatever's coming next week, what have you been doing this week?
Oh, not a whole lot. Keeping up with my dailies. Sort of getting back into getting my comp cape back. Still kind of working on the tech trees with invention and kind of, you know, getting on that and getting all that filled out. And then, you know, just working towards trim. It's just the sort of never ending. Seems like it's never ending, because the rate at which updates come out are usually in some way or form, you know, tied to the requirements. So, you know, still inching towards there, but, you know, it'll happen one of these days. More of a long-term goal, but yeah, you got to keep at it. So.
And that's precisely why I will never go for comp or trim, because it's just a moving target that I don't think I could keep up with.
That's right, yeah.
So, all right. As for me this week on RS, I have been doing some herb lore. It's a much slower skill than farming, and it's a lot harder to fund with. Because the best I have been able to do so far in this week is negative 1,500 GP per potion, which comes out to about negative 8 GP per XP. So, I mean, it's not easy compared to everything else. And it's so grand exchange dependent. Right. And, of course, the main problem is getting secondary ingredients and whatnot. But the Grand Exchange option that I have been going with this week was actually suggested by someone who frequents the chat and has been on the show before, and that's Touchpad Pro. He suggested Super Prayer Renewal Potions because both of those are easily purchasable on the GE, the Prayer Potion and the Prayer Renewal. And then you just need a flask and away you go. And that's actually only losing 1,500 GP as of yesterday when I last did it. So it's a great thing to do.
There you go.
But aside from that, just herb runs, kind of taking a break from the invention training with the woodcutting. Have to see if there's anything else later in the tech tree that might come out that would be interesting to me that would encourage me to keep training past level 63. But there you go. That's that. So anything else before we go?
I think we pretty much covered it.
All right. Well, with that being said, this has been RSBNB Update once again, finishing our 11th year, heading off into our 12th year. Thank you to the listeners out there for making this possible, and of course to you, Dave, for co-hosting this quarter.
Absolutely.
And of course, also before I go, we should say our condolences to anyone affected by the tragic terrorist attack in Orlando.
Absolutely.
And with that being said, thank you for sharing your time with us, and we'll be back next week.
See ya.